Let me invite you to open your Bibles to Nehemiah chapter 5. Nehemiah chapter 5. Now, we're going through hard times as a nation, and I hear people on the news more and more referring to this period of time that we're going through as the Great Recession. There are some of you who remember or who had parents who remembered very well going through the Great Depression. And I suppose as long as there are people on this earth, we're going to go through cycles of plenty and then want. And that's been the case all through history. And as we look at this passage in Nehemiah chapter 5, this is a period in which the people were going through a great depression. They were hard times. They had come back into a land that had been devastated by war. And they were trying to rebuild, and the people were struggling in a variety of areas. And anytime you have hard times, there will always be opportunists who come in, who try to take advantage and exploit those hard times. And that's exactly what was happening here in Nehemiah. So I want us to think tonight, as we always try to do this time of year, about the way we use our monies and the way we incur debt and how we're going to feel in January because of what we spent in December. So I want us to look through all of this and remind you of what the wise man said in Proverbs chapter 22 and verse 7 when he wrote, "The rich rule over the poor, and the borrower is the servant of the lender." This evening, we want to look at this story in Nehemiah. The Jews had returned from Babylon. They were rebuilding the temple and rebuilding their homes and rebuilding their economy. And part of the problem was that the debt load that had become a ball and chain around the ankles of some was the opportunity for others to enrich themselves. Let's just read through this first section and you'll see what I'm talking about. Nehemiah chapter 5, verses 1 through 5. "Now the men and their wives raised a great outcry against their Jewish brothers. Some were saying, 'We and our sons and daughters are numerous. In order for us to eat and stay alive, we must get grain.' Others were saying, 'We're mortgaging our fields, our vineyards, and our homes to get grain during the famine.' And still others were saying, 'We have had to borrow money to pay the king's tax on our fields and vineyards, although we are of the same flesh and blood as our countrymen, and though our sons are as good as theirs, yet we have to subject our sons and daughters to slavery. Some of our daughters have already been enslaved, but we are powerless because our fields and our vineyards belong to others.' Fussing and feuding among themselves. Some were taking advantage of the situation. Others were being taken advantage of. And I don't think there's a soul here tonight that's never had a fuss with their spouse over money. Money brings out the best and the worst in all of us. These folks had gotten themselves into deep financial problems. In verse 3, they had mortgaged their fields, their vineyards, and their houses just to stay alive. In verse 4, they had to borrow money just to pay their taxes. Have you ever had to do that? Verse 5, they had even mortgaged the future of their children. They were not going to be able to leave them a legacy, a gift, an inheritance. They were only going to leave them indebtedness. And I know it's been the consensus of prophets and financiers as they've talked about what's happening in our nation and that we're experiencing a whole paradigm shift. And one of the realities that they're saying is going to come out of this is that for the first time, this generation that's growing up now will not experience the material prosperity that the previous generation has experienced. And all the way from the early 1900s, it's gotten better and better and better for every generation. And now they're saying, well, it's going to go the other way for a change. So I think we can identify a little bit with what the people in Nehemiah's day were going through. I doubt that we have it as hard as they did, but those same elements are present today. I gave a little obedience test this morning. I want to give another test tonight, and this is a financial bondage test. And you just answer yes or no and keep account of how many yeses you answer. That's the only thing that matters. Just count your yeses. Okay, let me ask you these questions. Do you charge your daily expenditures because you don't have the cash to pay for them? Are you borrowing money to pay for fixed monthly expenses? I'm talking about your car payment or your rent or your mortgage. Do you really know how much you owe, or are you afraid to add up the numbers? Do you have bill collectors that are constantly trying to get in touch with you? Are you taking out new loans in order to pay off old loans? Do you ever argue with your mate about money? We all smile at that old ditty that we've heard before. Theirs was the perfect marriage, but for one feminine flaw. He was quick on the deposit, she was faster on the draw. Number 7, have you ever considered being dishonest due to financial difficulties? And lastly, do you ever rob God in your giving due to your financial distress? Now, the fellow that came up with this little test said if you have answered yes to more than 4 of those questions, that would indicate you are likely in financial bondage. Now notice the response of Nehemiah to the financial bondage of his fellow Jews. This outcry was coming up. These people were mortgaged up to their eyeballs, and they had no wiggle room, and they were about to go down the tubes. And Nehemiah heard this outcry, and there in chapter 5, verse 6, he says, "When I heard their outcry and these charges, I was very angry." He was angry because some people had taken advantage while others had at times got themselves into these messes financially. But it was a terrible situation to be in. He goes on to say there after his anger, he says, "I pondered them in my mind and then accused the nobles and officials. And I told them, 'You're exacting usury from your own countrymen.' So I called together a large meeting." So he tries to resolve this conflict, and he goes on to lay out several steps to help people get out of financial bondage if they find themselves in that area. On down he talks, and in verse 15, he gives us one of the first steps to getting out of financial bondage. It says there in verse 15, "But the earlier governors, those preceding me, placed a heavy burden on the people and took 40 shekels of silver from them in addition to food and wine, and their assistants also lorded it over the people. But out of reverence for God, I did not act like that." This little phrase here can change everything. Out of reverence for God. Nehemiah was an official. He was in a position of power. He would have been in a position to take advantage of others. He could have insisted on the people paying him a nice salary, but he was willing to forgo that because of his fear of the Lord. If God is first, everything else will take care of itself. And, you know, we fortunately live in a country where this kind of thing, for the most part, has safeguards on it. It's not possible for people to completely take advantage of someone else through usury. We're regulated in our country. But anytime there's a disaster, anytime there's a sudden shortage, there are people who will step out and try to take advantage of that situation. If God is first, everything else will take care of itself. Jesus said in Matthew 6:33, "But seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well." One wise person has said, we are to love people, use things, and worship God. There's a second principle contained in the next verse. Verse 16 here is Nehemiah talked with these leaders of the people in an effort to resolve this financial crisis that they were dealing with. It says, he says, instead, I devoted myself to work on this wall. All my men were assembled there for the work. We did not acquire any land. Most people, and I include myself in this, if I let myself think this way, most people want more money so we won't have to keep working. And that's the way we're taught to think from the earliest age. One day, if I could just win the lottery. One day, if somehow I could get a big inheritance. One day, if somehow I'd get a lot of money, I wouldn't have to work anymore. Well, that's not the real goal. God never intended that. God said, 6 days you shall labor, and one shall you rest. And the one story in the Bible that really describes a man doing that very dream is the story of a man who wanted to get to the point that he could eat, drink, and be merry and take his ease. And that story didn't have a very happy ending, did it? God spoke to him that night and said, fool, this night your soul will be required of you. Now, it's not wrong to retire, and don't misunderstand me. We've talked about that recently. But when we are able to stop our regular work, that just simply frees us up to do other things. And I will have to say and commend many of the retired people in this church family. You tell me and I observe that you are busier in retirement than you ever were when you were working full-time. And that's a good thing, to be busy and doing good and blessing and helping the lives of others. Now, it's interesting here because Nehemiah was a man of integrity. And he makes this little statement here. He says, I worked on the wall. I did not acquire land. Well, what's he saying that for? What does that mean, that he did not acquire land? Well, he was the political leader there on the site. And very often when you're in politics, you have inside information and you know where the new streets are going to be. And you're able to move ahead of the average citizen and enrich yourself by the knowledge that you have. But Nehemiah refused to do that. He was a man of integrity. And God blesses people like that. And even more than that, God entrusts riches to people like that. Well, there's a third element in this, and that is the spirit of generosity. Look in verses 17 and 18. He says, furthermore, 150 Jews and officials ate at my table, as well as those who came to us from the surrounding nations. Each day, one ox, six choice sheep, and some poultry were prepared for me, and every 10 days an abundant supply of wine of all kinds. And in spite of all this, I never demanded the food allotted to the governor, because the demands were heavy on these people. This one man sustained 150 hungry people out of his own pocket. He knew the truth of what Jesus would later say, that it's more blessed to give than to receive. Through all this, God worked in the life of one man, and God blessed Nehemiah, and he enriched him. In Proverbs 11:24, it says, one man gives freely and yet gains even more. Another withholds unduly but comes to poverty. And I can testify to the truth of that verse in my own experience. There are times when I have been stingy and it seemed like I never had enough to go around. And then there are times when I've been generous and it seemed like money just continued to last through the month and over into the next month, and I couldn't explain it any other way. God blesses us in these ways. The last principle is in verse 19, and that is trust God to meet your needs. There in verse 19, Nehemiah says, "Remember me with favor, O my God, for all I have done for these people." He trusts God and appeals to God to meet the needs. He comes full circle. He starts out putting God first, and he ends by putting his trust in God. Whatever God orders, God can pay for. And whatever God asks us to do, he will empower us to be able to do that. Nehemiah was in no doubt that he was involved in doing the will of God in these things. And we just need to be sure that what we are doing in our lives and in our churches is the will of God. And then trust God to supply the need at hand. Now, this time of year, the temptation is to build a plastic prison for ourselves by overdoing. And my prayer for my family and for your family is that we'll be able to begin this new year moving out of bondage, and especially as God's people, that we'll not be tempted to get so deeply involved in debt that it will cause us to be unable to respond to the needs that are going to be very real in the new year. I don't know what it will be. Who would have known this year, as the new year dawned, that there would be a tornado just a short distance down the road, and that there would be storms in other parts of the country, that there would be financial needs within God's family right here at Sunset. And what a sad predicament it is to be so heavily indebted that even when you see a need and want to respond to that need, that you simply cannot because you're so heavily mortgaged yourself. I hope we can be the kind of people that we discipline ourselves so that we can give. What a blessing it is as individuals to be able to give and to know the blessedness of what Jesus spoke of there. Jesus came to set us free, and he sets us free in a variety of areas. The most important area is freedom from our sins. And so tonight we're going to sing an invitation song and want to encourage anyone here who is in bondage, especially spiritual bondage, to allow Jesus to take those chains off and never put them back on again. If you need to respond to the invitation of the gospel, we'll gladly assist you as you are obedient. If you need prayers, we'll pray for you tonight before we go home. We invite you to come right now as we stand and as we sing.